Hello and welcome to the newest episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, my cohorts, Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Hey.
And Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hey.
And joining us, again, first repeat guest, our editor-in-chief, Jordan Raup.
Hello.
All right, mixing it up with the intro, a full hello.
Yes.
Nice. And who's just joining us for the first time, we usually start our podcasts with a discussion topic related to film, film news, or trends in film, and then we move into a feature review. This week we'll be talking about Looper by Rian Johnson, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis. Then we'll wrap up by giving you our selections for the movies coming out on DVD and in theaters in the weeks ahead, and a random recommendation of something that we have seen this week on our own. Before we get into our discussion topic for today, which will be time travel in movies, we should mention that you should subscribe to us on iTunes. There's a brand new podcast app. Makes it kind of easy to find people and continuously download and subscribe. So you should do that. You should also comment us, give us a rating, all that fun stuff. And if you ever want to get in touch with us, you can at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So let's kick off our discussion topic, which, as I said, we'll be talking about the different implementations of time travel in film and just give you an impression of our favorite time travel movies. So, Jordan, why don't you kick us off on our discussion of time?
Sure. Let's see. Well, first, let's see. I guess I can bring up a few examples of my favorite. I'll do ones on two ends of the spectrum. So I would say one of my favorites that really, I think, utilizes it in a great way that services the story really well would be Time Crimes, which just came out a few years ago. Have any of you seen this film?
Yes, I have.
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the only one that hasn't.
Oh, come on.
God, Danny, come on.
I think it's somewhat similar to Looper, but we'll talk about that later, where in this film, this is Nacho Vigalondo, who just came out with a movie called Extraterrestrial, but I would say Time Crimes is much better. But in this movie, like I said, there's not a whole lot of explanation. You're just with this one character, and the storyline is kind of locked down with his perspective. It involves multiple timelines in this one area that he is in, and it does just a really, really good job of selling the mechanics and enough where it's not like Primer, which I'm sure we'll talk about, where they're obsessed with kind of getting to the nitty-gritty of everything. This one is kind of like Looper in the sense where it's just kind of a wild ride with a character, and so I really like that one. I don't know if anyone else wants to chime in on their thoughts on Time Crimes.
I enjoyed it. Thinking back on it, I don't really remember much of it. I don't know what that says about the film. I do remember enjoying it, though, and I enjoyed the use of the time travel as this weird kind of twisty plot mechanic.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I really liked about that film is how it plays in really small doses of time travel. Like, I think the man gets sent back like an hour before, and you see things happen that you're kind of questioning the first go around, and then it all kind of clicks together when you see, you know, when he gets further deep into the story, kind of things start to unravel. And I really like that kind of aspect where Looper has a few of those where there's like a few touches, and then when it comes back around, you see the full extent of what happened. And it's dark, and it's also funny, and yeah. See it if you haven't. and then I'll give my one on the other end of the spectrum, which is now this is, I think it came out almost maybe the same year or a year after. And this is the stupidest possible example, but like a movie like Hot Tub Time Machine, where it just uses it as a complete joke. And
oh, come on.
I'd say it's like my absolute favorite. I'm just saying on two ends of the spectrum.
But that's not even a time travel movie.
Well, I mean, technically it is.
Nick, people travel through time in the movie.
Right.
And
Nick is so upset right now.
Nick, before you talk about La Jetée and stuff, I'm just going to bring up Hot Tub Time Machine, you know, because they're one of the same pretty much. No, I'll just say Hot Tub Time Machine. I laugh my ass off. And most other time travel movies, it kind of makes fun of time travel, a lot of time travel movies before it, including Back to the Future. And it's just a good time. That's all I have to say about Hot Tub. Yes.
I was a fan of Hot Tub Time Machine. I thought this is going to sound so stupid. The mechanics of the time travel were very weird. because the characters became their younger selves, but the one character who was like younger was still his normal self. So looking into the science of Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah. And Crispin Glover has a great little supporting role in that film.
Yeah, so. He definitely does. And I enjoyed that a lot. For me, I mean, obviously you brought up Primer. I think it's impossible to have like a time travel conversation without bringing Primer into it. Though I haven't seen the movie enough to be able to say exactly what happens. Like, there's so much twisting and turning in that. But the way that they handle the idea and the real world implications of time travel is really, really well thought out and well executed. And it's one of those films that it's almost like a puzzle box. Like, instead of using the time travel to make any sort of commentary, they do it as a means of really screwing with your head. We haven't said Back to the Future yet. Back to the Future. One of the best time travel movies, because it's one of those ones that allows for that zany old problem of, like, someone from the future going to the past and having to deal with all the crazy differences going on. And that's the subgenre that, for me, usually sucks the most. I know that's a weird way to put it. What was it? Kate and Leopold? Hugh Jackman is sent into the future to show some generically pretty movie star how men used to be and to help her fall in love. I don't know. Like, that kind of stuff usually annoys the shit out of me. But Back to the Future is clever enough and fun enough that it kind of gets away with that for me. Nick, what about you? What are some of your go-to time travel films, and what do you like about them and the way they use time travel?
My favorite is Men in Black 3. Which came
classic example.
Yeah.
I was thinking about saying that. Because honestly, there's a little part of me that does like Men in Black 3.
Gotta extinguish that.
Nick is getting his mind blown by our time travel picks.
Yeah. Back to the Future, I guess, is my favorite. Which I feel funny saying because it's such a stock expected answer, but who the hell cares? So there's that. That stands out, as well as 12 Monkeys is one of my favorites too. La Jetée is, yes, it's a time travel story, sure, but I don't really see it as such. I more watch it for the artistry on display and how Chris Marker achieved that.
Didn't you also say that it wasn't really a movie?
Well, also, I mean, it's a short too. It's part of the problem as well. So I don't really think of that, honestly, even though that's actually one of the best examples. But those are the two that I go to. I really like Time Crimes from a few years ago. That was fun. Primer, I remember not liking when I saw it, but I didn't understand it. So obviously that impacted how I viewed it. I'll watch that again at some point, I guess. So time travel films, I don't really have a strong opinion of, to be honest. I mean, I like the conceit, but I don't think there's enough of them, honestly, to really... I don't think there's enough of them, and I don't think there's nearly enough good ones to actually make a huge list out of.
Really?
Should we highlight a few of the bottom of the barrel ones, just so we can span it all?
13 going on 30, anyone?
Is that time travel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
She right. goes... She. What was it? Like a Wiccan hexes her or something, and she goes... She's like... Gets catapulted forward 17 years or something.
Yeah.
There's actually a director who has one of my favorites and one of what many think are the worst. Richard Kelly, anyone?
Oh, God.
So, yeah, I like some of the ideas in Donnie Darko. I won't say it's great, but I do like some of the ideas, especially when I was first getting into film. You know, that's kind of one of the movies that a lot of people go to.
Yeah.
But then South End Tales, which I can appreciate some aspects of it, but by and large, I think that movie has literally every kind of movie in it, so I can't even for the life of me remember what part of it is a time travel movie, but I could swear there is some.
Danny, what about yourself? Do you have any ideas you want to throw down?
Can we bring Dark Shadows into this?
Oh, for the love of God. Yeah, if you really want
and it's
to.
It's coming out on Blu-ray.
Because, I've already bought the Blu-ray, and I'm going to try to get Tim Burton to sign it. And
then I'm gonna ritualistically throw it into a fire, hoping that it extinguishes both him and the movie.
Wow.
I did not like that film.
Yeah, no.
$150 million.
To continue along the comedic route that Jordan brought up, I watched Woody Allen's Sleeper last night. Have any of you guys seen that?
I have not, no.
And it actually expires on Netflix Instant like tomorrow, so by the time this podcast goes up, no one will be able to watch it, but it's really funny. It's more of kind of a societal critique of the time period than a time travel movie. There's really no logic to how Woody Allen's character just jumps forward in time and wakes up and tries to be a robot and runs around like Buster Keaton. But it's really, really funny. It's really good.
I'm trying to think, like, looking at our choices for what is good time travel or not. I mean, like, it seems like most films in a specific genre that have a specific trope usually try to do the same thing. Time travel allows for many different things, but I feel like most often it kind of gets played for laughs. Dark Shadows kind of is like that.
we should probably bring up the Terminator films. Just
I don't even think of those as time travel, but that's a good point.
Yeah, I agree though. Like, yeah, I think it depends, you know, how
some of the most incomprehensible use of time travel, though, Terminator. If you think about it, because it makes no sense whatsoever.
No, how that it absolutely does not. You can't come back with clothes. You can't send back non-organic stuff unless it's like wrapped in skin. But then they send back a liquid metal guy because fuck it.
That's not my problem though. My problem is that they send back somebody to 1982 to kill this woman, right? So just go back 30 years before when she's an infant. Just snuff her out there.
Just go back maybe 78 we'll talk about years that and then kill the grandmother. Like, there's so many options.
But they always keep going forward, too. Yeah. So, you know, the next try, they have to sort of be chronological with it.
All that would have taken was one line of dialogue where it's like, we can only go back a fixed amount of time.
Exactly, but they never bothered to.
No, they never do.
So fuck you, James Cameron.
He's so lazy. That's just...
lazy screenwriting. They couldn't both fit on the door, really? God. I have a personal vendetta against Cameron. I'm not going to get into it. He's wronged me. Any final thoughts of this before we get into personally? I'm sorry?
He's personally wronged you?
Yeah, I view it that way, but it's not. Like, James Cameron didn't like run over my dog or something. Yeah, any final thoughts on good time travel films or what makes a good time travel film before we jump into Looper?
Just play by the rules that you create, I say, and I think Looper does that, so...
Yeah, I also think don't get hung up on the logic either. I'm being serious. Don't get hung up on the logic of the time travel because it doesn't really do you any good ultimately.
That's what Primer does. Like, Primer really delves into the logic of it, and that's one of the reasons I liked it.
But that's a very different kind of time travel movie. If we're talking about Back to the Future or Looper or anything like that, just keep going.
Does anyone else have it happen in their head anytime someone says Back to the Future, you can hear the theme song playing in your head? No?
That's just you.
Okay.
Yep, just you.
I am pop culture saturated.
Oh, I actually have one random one. Does Frequency count? I like that movie, but
that's a good movie. Yeah.
Time travel through a
hand radio. Really, it's time transposition.
Yes.
Time transcendent.
I just wanted to see.
How about Groundhog Day?
Very light time travel.
That's a little bit of a time travel, I guess, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it's going back. So.
Well, guys, the time traveler's wife, of course.
I mean, I never saw that.
What about the lake house with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock?
Or Click. I mean, Deja Vu, you guys talked about.
Deja Vu's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There we go. So many time travel films that we forgot.
Many. And they all do so many different things. Let's talk about the most recent time travel film and what it does and whether or not it does it well or not. This, of course, will be Looper, directed by Rian Johnson, starring Bruce Willis, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Emily Blunt.
Time travel has not yet been invented. But 30 years from now, it will have been. I am one of many specialized assassins in our present called Loopers. So when criminal organizations in the future need someone gone, they zap him back to me. And I eliminate the target from the future.
Oh la la.
Loopers are well paid. We live the good life. And the only rule is... never let your target escape. Even if your target is you.
All right, so that was from the trailer for Looper, which is out in theaters now. This is by the director of Brick and the Brothers Bloom, starring, you know, two fairly hot commodity actors, Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So let's get into our feelings on this film. What did we think of it? We'll go spoiler-free. We're going to have to make some calls on what counts as spoilers, so I want to go as vague as possible to begin with, and then we can just jump right into spoilers afterwards. So let's try to avoid any plot details you think could be spoilers.
Maybe just what the trailer includes, because I think that only covers right? The first act.
Yeah. Okay, so Jordan, you're our guest. Why don't you start us off?
Sure. Yes, of course. Yes, I will say right up front, I love this movie a lot. It was a great ride. Yeah, I really like Johnson's other two films. And yeah, this Looper, I think it is definitely, I would say, his most entertaining overall. And I really like some of how I was kind of shocked as well as kind of how brutal the movie is in both sound design and editing, and just everything kind of coalesces, and we can definitely talk about that later, but it just keeps upping the ante scene after scene. I do kind of like how it starts off as almost a film noir and then kind of shifts into something very different, and I think that works very well. And yeah, that's my basic thoughts. There's tons to talk about, but go see this movie.
Danny, what about yourself?
I really liked it too. I actually saw it a second time yesterday because I went to see it the first time and it had been a while since I saw his first two movies, and I didn't remember caring for them that much. And this movie, you know, I was looking forward to it, but not at a particularly high level. And I was just completely unexpected for what the movie turned out to be. I didn't even know it was rated R. So I just figured it was like a PG-13 movie. And so when things started happening, it just really caught me off guard.
Right. You realize in the second shot that it's rated R.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about like before I saw it. Like for some reason, I just assumed it was a PG-13 movie.
Right, but then literally the second shot of the film is kind of a dead giveaway.
And so I wasn't expecting that. And then I watched his first two films again and then went to see Looper again. And I definitely think it's his best film to date. It's the only film he's made where kind of the bizarre plotting, to me, still works toward a common goal. Because Brick and Brothers Bloom, I like kind of the first hour of each of those movies, and I really like the atmospheres. But then some of the plotting just kind of gets out of control for me. And even though you can make that argument here, I still think it's working toward a common purpose that never feels like it loses focus. And, you know, like a lot of people have said, it's surprisingly emotional and just a really original piece of work.
And Nick, what are your thoughts on The Bonfire?
I was very fond of this film. I'm just going to speak this way for the rest of the podcast.
I was about to say, choosing every word so carefully.
Yes. No, I quite liked it. I thought it was mostly just an entertaining way to spend 2 hours. I think that Johnson has kind of crafted something in his plot that has such momentum to it. It keeps going and moving, and it's so well plot. It's so well planned in that sense. It never stops. It's there's always something interesting going on screen. I think formally, this is his best film easily, and script wise too. I don't think it's very effective emotionally speaking. That's my biggest problem with the movie. The ending doesn't really have much of an impact on me. But everything that comes before it is good. I do have my problems, but that's mostly overshadowed by what works, and that is that comes in a large quantity.
I disagree on the emotional thing. I thought that the movie worked very well that way. Yeah, this was one of my more anticipated films of this year, and it didn't let me down, thank God. I also liked both of his other films a lot. Brick was a fantastic film noir, and I appreciated that even though they transposed it to a California high school, it worked really well that way. Like, it wasn't like a Disney film where they do something like that and everything is all iPods and nonsense. I don't know. Brick really works for me. Brothers Bloom was great, but very different from Brick. And part of me was okay with that. Part of me had problems with it because I liked Brick so much and I wanted to see more of that, you know, crime stylized drama. And so Looper really works for me in that sense. It has more of the tone and feeling of Brick in it, which is great. And the action is wonderful. The acting is top notch. The direction from like a stylistic standpoint can't be beat. The music was really good too. This is another of those films that I'm going to have to buy the soundtrack for. which has been happening a lot this year and has never happened to me in any year previous. So I don't know what's happening in the world of movie music, but keep it up, guys, because it's rocking. Yeah, I loved this film. It was great, and I cannot wait till I get to go and see it again, hopefully soon. And yeah, that's my thoughts. Like I said, we're trying to stay away from spoilers pretty enthusiastically, because there's a lot in this film that wasn't hinted at early in the marketing and maybe came a little later. But if you're like me and you've been avoiding spoilers as much as you can, I don't want to ruin any of that for you.
That part's interesting, because Rian Johnson said that it wasn't his decision at all not to talk about what they don't talk about in the marketing. They said it was more Sony said that what they don't talk about in the marketing is not marketable at all, so they didn't want to focus on it, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, I was going to say it would have made it a tougher sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they pared it down, you know, as much as they felt they had to in order to...
I rewatched a trailer, like, after I saw it, and it's just funny how little... I only was looking forward to this movie because of Rian Johnson. I mean, obviously the trailer is very cool and there's lots of cool imagery, but in terms of story, it's like, it sets it up and then there's literally nothing. It's like, we're on the run. And then there's nothing else that it really tells you. So I really enjoyed how, after that, how he really does, explore this world quite a bit. So
yeah. And the thematic,
having only watched the first, trailer, I guess that was something like 5 months ago. I literally really had no idea what this film was actually about, other than, guy goes back, meets his past self, and then trouble ensues. And then as it was going along, that made the experience of watching it so much more fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's this weird thing where I knew what the film was about in a very vague sense, as much as the first trailer gave off. And I was looking forward to it primarily just because it's Rian Johnson, and he's one of those directors that I'll just follow to the grave. And I was surprised at how thematically deep and rich it ended up being, because the marketing kind of sold it, like you said, Jordan, like, we're on the run. But there's so much more to it than that, and the movie has so many interesting ideas and themes at play that I was really, really pleasantly surprised. This is one of those movies where this has been like a very disappointing year for me. And so just like Lawless, this is a movie that I was really looking forward to that succeeded beyond expectation rather than the numerous ones that kind of fell on their face. So I'm happy for that. So I say you should definitely go and see this movie right away, because as I've been saying a lot recently, I like this director. I want them to work more. So you need to give them your money. Just do it.
Yes.
We can get into spoilers now, I believe, because... like I said, I mean, there's a lot of things happening here, and I don't know what people would consider a spoiler, because, screw it. Spoiler warning, I'm going to have to start saying spoilers in order to explain why I'm not sure what's a spoiler or not. The telekinetic abilities, I had no inkling that that was going to be included in this movie.
Yeah, I just knew early on in the trailer they showed that Emily Blunt can do that little thing with the cigarette lighter. I think it's in the trailer. And beyond that, he really, really goes to the absolute end of the spectrum that he could with that. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was like, I'm just sitting there in the theater. I'm like, okay, like time traveling assassin, or, the assassin who kills people from the future for the people in the future. That's fine. I got that. And then all of a sudden, Paul Dano's character starts levitating a quarter. And the thing that I love is that that's like literally the extent of the abilities that most telekinetic people have. That's the kind of nonsense that seems oddly true to life. Like this big evolutionary leap forward, but it's actually like a small stumble. And then the sheer brutality of the fact that Bruce Willis has come back with a plan to save his future life. And that plan involves murdering children.
Yeah, that was one of the first moments in the movie where I would say, I think I talked to Nick a little bit before this, but yeah, there's about, I think, 3 to 4 moments where I kind of was like jaw agap, like, holy crap, they're going this way and doing this. And I would say the first for me would be when Paul Dano's older self disintegrates, or, they're chopping him up. And that's where I could really, I mean, of course, there's that montage early on where Joseph Gordon-Levitt just annihilates like 5 guys, and from there I knew it was going to be a brutal movie. But I really love that sequence with Paul Dano's character, because Johnson just shows you kind of learn exactly how this mechanic works. It even sets up a joke with Bruce Willis. I mean, I guess it's not a joke, but the Beatrix thing.
Yeah.
I just love how he uses the way he implements time travel is through these visual sequences, which are just extraordinarily captured, I thought. And then yeah, like you said, the sequence you were talking about, that was another one where I was just like, wow, this is where this movie is going. All right. And I was really excited to go along with it.
Yeah, that sequence where Paul Dano's older self is being slowly but surely disappeared. Like, that was some compelling stuff. And that's when you really start to get a handle on the rules at play.
I saw it at a press screening, and there was these two girls. I don't know who they got in, but they were sitting next to us. And during every brutal part of this movie, they literally screamed. Like, I'm talking like not just like talking to each other, but like, oh my god, what is going on? Like that, like saying that out loud. So I don't know if the movie was just more effective because I thought someone was also getting murdered next to me. but yeah, so that just added to like, you know.
So I take it when his nose disappeared, they were not happy.
Yeah, I think it just accentuated that how brutal this movie was, because even like slight things where someone's fingers get caught in, like when Noah Segan's fingers get caught in the like door trap, the underneath door trap, like even just the way Johnson like edits that and handles that in the sound design is just like, it just makes you cringe, and I think it just like keeps you gripped the whole time, which is great.
Yeah, this movie has a really excellent handle on tone and pace. Like, it's a very, it doesn't let go. Even in its slower moments, once Joseph Gordon-Levitt is taken to, or not taken to, but arrives at the farm, like aura that something is happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't even know if he intended this, but like because of that door trap scene early on, when Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Sid, the kid, are underneath the other kind of trap door outside, I kept thinking like something horrendous was going to happen, like Garrett Dillahunt's character would just come out in front of him and like start shooting them or something. So
Jesus.
Yeah. There was just like unnerving sense. Again, it could be the people next to me screaming every second, but I was just unnerved this whole movie. And I love movies that can do that. So
good. Nick, right. You had said that this movie didn't deliver so much for you on the emotional scale.
Yeah.
Would you like to expound upon that so that we can tear you apart?
There's a very noticeable stab at pathos in the last roughly 5 minutes in the movie, where you see sort of from Joe's perspective what's going to happen to this kid after his mother dies and all that. And the intent behind it is good, and I think the execution of it is not necessarily poor, but I just didn't feel anything when he sacrifices himself to save this relationship, probably because there isn't much of the actual of said relationship between the mother and the son that came before. I didn't think there was enough of it for me to actually react to it. If there was any emotional feeling in the movie, it would have to come from Bruce Willis's character and sort of the mission he's on, because he has a really horrible mission to carry out, but at the same time, you can completely understand why he's doing it, and it's actually entirely justifiable. And it's ironic because the Bruce Willis sections of the movie are by far my least favorite, because I think that's just kind of a standard action film starring him. So there is a pretty noticeable imbalance there when it comes to not just that section of the film, but also how they sort of cohere at the end, I think.
Because I found the relationship between the kid and his mother and Gordon Levitt's sacrifice of himself in order to, you know, keep that union whole, you know, their lives intact as well as they could be, I found that to be pretty compelling, because he has a moment with that kid earlier on where he says, I was like you, like, you know, my mother was gone, and then he was sold to a bunch of vagrants and turned to crime, and so he knew what this kid would have to go through, and so he was sacrificing himself, not even really just to stop this child from turning into someone horrible later on in life that would hurt other people, but just to save the child's kind of soul in mm-hmm. general himself. And yeah, I found that to be a pretty honorable, interesting idea.
See, I think there would have been more to it if you got the idea that his character was a bad guy, but I don't think that's communicated at all from early on.
Murder himself, like.
I don't understand what you mean.
I got the impression that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was not a great guy.
No, I'm not saying he's a great guy, but I don't think he's a bad guy either. I mean, I...
Well, he murdered. I don't know. Like his job is to kill people. Like, I don't know. And you can kind of... I think it sets up it really well in the first act where he's just... His life is just doing drugs and then murdering people.
But he's not killing innocent people. He's not going down the street shooting random people in the head. He's a hitman. It doesn't make him a good guy, but he's not exactly horrible. I didn't get that impression.
But because
of that, at the end, when he sacrifices himself, sure, it's noble, but I don't... particularly it doesn't feel like a huge step for him.
Doesn't know who's being sent back. It's the mobsters that are sending people back, so it could be
it could be anyone
they want.
It could be
anyone,
laundromat owner who doesn't want to pay protection money. I mean,
yeah.
But no,
it'd be awesome if there was a scene with
that. Danny wants to see a laundromat owner get murdered.
But it's different in that sense because he's just doing this as a contract. He's not killing people out of spite or anger. I mean, that makes him sociopath, but it doesn't necessarily make him...
But he sort of is. I mean, he's using this as a surrogate for killing the people who bought him from his parents.
Is he? I don't think so.
That's what he basically tells the kid.
No, but I didn't feel that. I don't think that's communicated strongly enough.
Okay, because I felt personally that it was. I felt that being communicated... You know, there's no accounting for the differences between one person getting a connection of that and the other person not. I can't really critique your read of a film in that manner. So, but yeah, no, I thought that was communicated pretty clearly and pretty well. I can't speak for you. I don't know.
But I will say, like, just the way Johnson is, like, he doesn't really, I mean, he does have a few scenes, like you said, you know, that just take their time, but just the filmmaker that he is, he kind of, at least in his other films, kind of brushed past a lot of that. I don't want to say development, but he just like the sequence at the end, like you get that kind of 1 second flashback, like, or, you know, I mean, 10 second sequence or so where, you know, he just says, I could see why a mom would die for her son and why a man would kill for his wife. And that hit me just because I think that little piece of writing is great. But I mean, I will kind of side with Nick a little bit in the sense that it's not as completely formed of a, I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, just due to the filmmaking style?
I think I do. You know, it's a long movie. It's about 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it would have been difficult for them to push more of that in. I felt that, you know, given the economy of storytelling that they had to utilize in order to tell the whole story in that amount of time, I thought that it was done pretty well.
Yeah. And supposedly coming straight from Johnson's mouth, there's 45 minutes of deleted scenes, which is quite a bit. So I don't know. Maybe we'll get some more.
Fingers crossed for extended cut Blu-ray.
Yeah. He said he did confirm that will all be on the Blu-ray. So
nice.
Yeah. No, I kind of liked in terms of just some other aspects of the movie. Like, I really liked kind of the brief moments of world building. Like, I got a slight Children of Men vibe, just like with, there's a shot where towards the beginning, kind of one of the first shocking moments as well, when I think they're just driving in their car, kind of going through this like city, and you just see someone like steal someone else's, like, I forget what it is, like a bag or something, and he just shoots him with like a gun. Like, do you remember that scene?
Yeah, I do.
Your school bus. And it just kind of like perfectly sets up, like, you know, the divide. Even though I thought Paul Dano was a little ridiculous in his first scene with, like, he's like yelling at someone for touching his bike, and like there's like no semblance of like what is other, like, you would think that if there was this such a class divide, they wouldn't literally be hanging out in the same exact area. I don't know. It's not like In Time where someone can, you know, there's literal. I know that's a funny movie
to bring up, but
that was like one of the last ones I remember where it's like you literally have to travel like for an hour to get to another part of the city, to like another part where there's rich people. But I don't know, that was just an element that I found a little interesting. Like,
you know, there's so many little touches like that in this film that help you kind of see the world, like all the solar panels mounted to cars, and then the kind of cord that leads into where the gas tank would be. Their money is Chinese. I was seeing that right, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some sort of world economy thing happening.
Well, did you guys know, this was kind of funny, I also saw this interview, because there's Chinese backers, the original script called for the place that he wanted to go to was France, and then they flipped him around.
Yeah, I remember writing about that.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah. Well, no, they also. Well, that was later too, where they actually included more China into the. Was that part of that news story too, where it was they actually included more China?
No, this was January of last year. Believe it or not, that long ago, right before they started shooting, the Chinese backers came aboard.
Oh, okay.
And they had so to make that switch.
It was then they decided? Because I heard that they literally just wanted a few more shots of China, but I also heard that they actually literally changed the script where the place he goes to is China, like way before the Chinese backers.
I remember being in January.
That's funny. Yeah. Hey, it worked out though, I guess. If you saw the box office, it made the first time ever in history where a movie grossed more in China than it did in the U.S. on opening weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Well, there's a longer cut in China, which has more of those sequences, actually. So that might be part of it.
I absolutely love the way they showed the 30 years go by.
That's one of my favorite scenes, like sequences in a movie like this year.
Yeah. I hate to keep bringing it up, but he said, like in Johnson's thing, but he said that was one of the most difficult scenes to cut, and they only figured out about a week before they had the lock picture that he was kind of messing around with it, and he put in the 10 years, 20 years, 30 years over it, and he said that kind of helped because before they didn't even have that, and so, but he said that was like the most difficult scene to.
Yeah, because it was weird. There was it almost felt a little bit like Contagion. You know, the music going, and then, you know, just getting vignettes with the chyrons over it that say, you know, what's happening. Yeah, this movie, like, just in the way that it's constructed, you have Joseph Gordon-Levitt falling out of a window, and then it just goes back to him in the field killing someone, like, normally, and it turns out to be his older self, and I was like, what the hell is going on here? And so, things like that in this movie, and they do that a lot, where they kind of go back to fill you in further on what happened.
Yeah, I'm so glad they kept that. Johnson was saying how that they were pressured to maybe get rid of that sequence altogether. So I'm so glad they had that, because that was one of the really big, you know, differences in most time travel movies, that, you know, they'll actually.
I can't believe they would want him to cut that sequence. That's so important to the film.
I know. I guess do it a different way or something. I don't know. But odd. It leads into also one of the best kind of. The sequences in turn, you know, the diner scene. I love just the way, just the mechanics of that with, you know, these two people that are the same person, and just the idea that, you know, the different experiences you have at a certain age, you know, almost like a father and a son.
That was the weirdest thing, was just this idea of them being like a father and a son, and, you know, like going back to your impetuous youth and trying to slap some fucking sense into yourself and it not working. Because one of the other things that I was taken aback by was the idea that the loopers knew that they were going to have to kill themselves, because in the trailer they don't give any indication of that. It sort of seems like it's a surprise that one of them gets sent back, but I was thinking about it, I'm like, no, that makes sense, because you're like, I'm getting a shit ton of money, my job involves like doing this one thing, and I can be kind of a gangster badass, and I'm gonna die in 30 years, like, who gives a shit? And it's that same kind of cavalier, doesn't care about the future attitude that drives a lot of our worst habits, like smoking, drinking, eating terrible food.
Yeah. No, I totally love that concept. I thought Johnson really pulled that off. And even in the beginning, you know, when they were celebrating closing the loops and stuff, I was like,
yeah, it's like, I just freaking killed myself, guys. Drinks from the house. Exactly. It's like, what? Are you crazy?
Exactly.
That was really messed up.
Yeah, and what did you do? You guys like Emily Blunt's character? How she kind of takes over? I don't know. I really enjoyed that. But
yeah, sure. Like I said, I don't have to do any equivocating with the second half of this film. I loved that whole storyline.
Yeah, yeah. I really love the idea of when his Bruce Willis's is his pocket watch, right, where he's checking to see if the face will disappear, because a whole other lifetime could be spent. You know, with Joseph Gordon-Levitt could have fallen in love with Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Instead, and I just love that idea, the way they handled that. I thought it was so well done.
I also think that Emily Blunt's character is almost like a companion a little bit to Bruce Willis, because he's kind of killing people, innocent people too, for his wife, and Emily Blunt is keeping her son alive at the risk of him killing people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of came full circle nicely for me, and that's one of the reasons that the movie just worked for me emotionally overall is because morally it was just so complex, especially for a Hollywood movie. You don't expect things like that to come into play, and it really caught me off guard in a really good way.
Yeah, definitely. The moral ambiguity of this movie is pretty interesting, because like we said, you know, Bruce Willis comes back. He knows that there's going to be this mastermind in the future who's going to start killing off loopers and apparently just slaughtering vagrants too.
And kind of, yeah, the sense that it's almost like, I mean, this is a kind of a crazy comparison, but I think like insinuating, like making a comment, like if you could go back and kill Hitler, like kind of, you know, because the kid kind of turns into that, I would say. It seems like in the future.
Yeah, it does seem that way. Yeah.
Just asking that question, would you do that?
Yeah. And there's literally a scene in this film where Bruce Willis kills a kid. Like, that was not, I kept expecting like there to be a cop out.
Yeah, I was even expecting it to like cut and then show the gunshot, but they show the gunshot in the same cut.
Yeah.
And
it was pretty rough. And then, you know, it shows the toll that it has on him. Like, he's not pleased that he has to do this, but it's very important for him to try to protect the woman who saved his life from the terrible choices that he'd made. And I like how Joseph Gordon-Levitt's relationship with Emily Blunt in that same way, it sort of becomes a compressed version of what his life would have been, and having to kill to save that woman, the woman that he loves. And it turns out that to do that, he has to kill himself. And that was pretty powerful for me. I liked that.
I wish I could feel the same way.
I do too. Jack. You missed a great movie by not liking this movie.
I gave it a fucking B+.
I know. Knowing me and Nick talking before, and I think I'm very happy at the place he is at in terms of liking a Rian Johnson film. So,
and I like this first. Oh my god, I like those two movies too. Jesus, it's like you can't win this guy. I know.
Yo, Nick, be honest. Did you walk out of this movie?
Sandy Kenyon was sitting in front of me, and he got up during an important scene to use the bathroom.
Oh, Sandy Kenyon, come on! Jesus. I even saw him give a positive thumbs up in the cab ride this weekend.
He missed a big scene. So,
which scene did he miss?
When he sells out Paul Dano's character.
Oh my gosh!
I missed it completely. It was like, ugh.
It's pretty good.
Kind of love that. That is such a great scene with Jeff Daniels, and we didn't really touch on this, but the just the comedy of the movie, like. I just love, you know, that got, I mean, I was in a screen full of critics, and everyone kind of laughed after the, you know, you should go to China part.
Yeah, that was great.
I think that scene, you know, you can look at like the visual aspects earlier in terms of world building, but the way Daniels acts that scene is really telling in terms of like, he almost treats this world comedically, where like, it really is interesting in terms of setting it apart from other futuristic kind of visions, because it almost makes you question like what the stakes are. And like, even as it goes along, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt says, if I cut my arm, it'll cut your arm. If I just do something else, your memories will be gone. And it just makes you think of this like endless cycle of events that will just disappear, kind of.
Yeah. I kept thinking like because he said he was from the future, you know, so I kept thinking he would be tied in again, like he was a younger character in the movie, but they didn't. And also another thought that I kind of like, how Johnson just kind of strings you along slightly, just to kind of catch you off guard. The way he shoots the early scenes with Sid, I almost thought somehow like he was a third loop, and that was a younger Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because they don't show his face, just the way he frames it. And Emily Blunt keeps saying like, "Don't, I don't want you to see my child at all." So I kept thinking like Sid was somehow. I don't even know how that would have possibly worked out.
I was about to
say,
that would have been crazy.
I know. It's like too much. But it just, that's, I think Johnson really, you know, really just like has a few touches like that, and doesn't go overboard with like trying to string you along and then completely going another way at the end, which I really liked about the movie as well. Like, everything seems to actually build on each other, you know, on each other. So yeah, good job, Johnson.
Woo. Way to go, Ryan. All right, any final thoughts on this before we close it up for discussion?
See this movie.
Do it.
Yeah, you should pay to see it. And I also like Noah Segan, too.
Yeah, Noah Segan, Kid Blue.
Yep.
When it started, I thought I was going to hate him because he's really shrill and just not my kind of character. But as he went on, I just grew accustomed to him.
We didn't even talk about the end scene with Bruce Willis just going on a rampage. I thought that was great. Rocking. And then even Noah Segan, how he's like, you just can't get anything. Like, he just brings it back, and then it just causes complete mayhem.
Yeah, his character in this is like a different version of his character, Dode from Brick.
Yeah.
Just like the well-meaning idiot who fucks everything up. Yeah. All right, well, yeah, I think you could tell that we think you should go see Looper. Check it out. Pay for it. Because, again, we have some people that we'd like to see get more work. So that means we can move on into our recommendations for things coming out on DVD and in theaters. So, coming out on DVD, Dark Shadows, People Like Us, Sound of My Voice, and Iron Sky, which if you haven't heard of Iron Sky, Moon Nazis.
I Sound of My Voice is probably one of my top five films of the year, so thus
you,
far.
You'd recommend that.
I mean, I don't know. I've only seen four films, so no, I'm just kidding. No, Sound of My Voice, yeah. I really loved it. And so I've had some contentious debates about it, but have you guys, anyone seen it before I go into
A friend of mine who I respect saw it, and he said he liked it. So
yeah. Another movie where, actually, another time travel movie, potentially.
No, that's true.
Yeah, no, I just love... I, if you don't know, it's just about this cult in Los Angeles, and a woman comes back and claims something, says she's from the future, and it's just about these two journalists who have to go kind of who plan to shoot a documentary and go undercover and investigate this cult. I just really, really like just the ideas that this young filmmaker plays with. I'm not even going to start trying to pronounce his name, but. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, no, definitely see it. I mean, I think it was shot for under like $500,000. So in terms of that, they really succeeded. So I liked it very much. So,
man, I just realized that Safety Not Guaranteed could count as a time travel movie.
Yes.
And that was fantastic. Though it's more about the idea of time travel than the actual action of traveling through time.
Yeah.
I have seen Iron Sky. it's a film. It's like a B-movie exploitation film from like the 70s, though it's made, you know, contemporaneously. But no, it's okay. I was a little drunk when I saw it, I'll be completely honest. So
isn't that a requirement? The DVD doesn't play unless you have a breathalyzer, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're not above like 0.2 alcohol, they don't start the movie. Like, look, we want to be sure that you'll like this. This movie helped with generous application of Jameson.
Did you see that in theaters or at home?
No, it's at home. It's it was on, I guess it still is on. You know, like sometimes they'll release movies like that early to like Xbox Live or something.
Okay, as long as you didn't buy it.
No. A friend of mine bought it, and he said I had to see it. Though he put his disclaimer that he was under the influence when he saw it and liked it too. So I don't know a single person who has seen this movie sober. So make it that what you will.
Yeah. A lot of Bond movies are coming out individually on Blu-ray, which is kind of interesting.
Which one do you think is the best Bond film coming out on Blu-ray?
A View to a Kill. It's a joke. The movie's awful. I'm looking at this, I guess. It's like all bad Bond movies. What the hell? No, I guess in that sense I'd have to go with GoldenEye.
You sound so enthusiastic about this.
It's kind of a paltry selection of Bond movies.
GoldenEye or Goldfinger?
GoldenEye. Really? And they clearly released a lot of these individually because they know they weren't going to sell well, like The Living Daylights, Octopussy.
The 50 Years of Bond.
Yeah. But the best release that we have not talked about is In the Mood for Love, which is coming out on Blu-ray.
Ooh.
Yes, love that movie.
So screw everything else, even Pet Sematary, which is coming out. Anybody ever seen that?
Pet Sematary?
I haven't.
Hell yeah.
You've seen it?
I've seen it, yes.
Fred Gwynne in that movie. One of my favorite horror performances of all time. That terrible main accent. You don't want to go down that road.
Now I want to look that up. I just want that scene.
Gage Cree died on that road. So, yeah.
You have to talk like that for the rest of this podcast.
Okay.
Great. Excellent. This is the first time I made like a suggestion to you about something and you've actually followed through. Or even just pretended to follow through.
I've been doing that voice for close to 6 years now, so.
All right, well, let's move into theatrical releases. Coming out October 5th, we have Taken 2, the continuing adventures of Liam Neeson's oddly Irish retired CIA agent, who this time apparently more of his family is captured or taken, and he has to go and take them back.
Well, he's taken two.
I was surprised that they didn't try to work that into the actual like trailer. Like, your mother's been taken, and you're going to be taken too. God damn it. Anyway, Frankenweenie.
Yeah, it's supposed to be absolutely horrible. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not even like in a fun way that the first one is, but...
That's awful, because I was really looking forward to that. We also have Frankenweenie by Tim Burton. It's just, I don't...
It's supposed to be better than his other movies.
Yeah, it's good early word.
Oh, great. It's like syphilis is better than AIDS. You know, you still experience them and contract them the same way, but one is markedly improved.
Jesus.
Fuck. I just don't like Tim Burton. I'm ready to just write off his entire career as some horrible, misguided, like, cultural disease. Jesus, wow. That was really rough. Tell us what you really think, Brian.
It was just right. In fact, you know what it was? It was Pitch Perfect, which opens in wide release.
Yeah, that was an excellent segue. Yes.
Which somehow people are enjoying. We'll have to see for ourselves.
That's what we're doing next week, right?
Oh, God.
Jesus.
I mean, like, you know, everyone wants to get pitch slapped. We talked about this poster for like 5 minutes last week.
Okay, can we just jump into some promising limited releases tonight?
The Paperboy?
Not that one. There's
VHS.
The one, oh yeah, I was gonna say VHS. It's fun. It's probably one of the better horror movies you'll see this year.
The House I Live In.
Yeah, that's the one I was gonna say. I haven't seen it yet, but the trailer is like fantastic. And by the guy who did Why We Fight. That's a good documentary. And then, this is kind of explores drug use in America and the war on drugs. So it's only opening in 2 theaters, so you probably won't see it. But it'll probably be on Netflix instant in a matter of months. So.
Yeah, I was going to say VOD, Netflix, that type of thing will fill in the gap. We also have The Oranges, which I think I saw the trailer for this, and I think I didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah. We'll have a review on the site. We had a mixed response to it. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the trailer was awful because I had no idea. Like, someone was having sex with someone else and it was causing problems. Like, that's as much as I was able to get.
I think the ending is that they're oranges and not humans.
That is the twist, the Shyamalanian twist. Actually, that sounds like a really delicious drink. We all know where my head is at. Butter.
I've seen this film.
Talent for Carving Butter. Is that good?
Yeah, it's okay. It's like really, really heavy political satire about this Midwestern city who their favorite pastime is carving butter and into these sculptures, and that aspect isn't so funny, but it is by the guy who did She's Out of My League, which I thought was slightly better than most rom-coms. And he kind of has, you know, he makes popcorn enjoyable movies, kind of like buttered popcorn.
Damn it.
So it's a passable time. It's on VOD. I think it has been for like a month and a half. So Hugh Jackman. Actually, Olivia Wilde is very funny in this. She plays this stripper who is having an affair with one of the butter carver's husbands, Jennifer Garner's husband, who the guy from Modern Family, which I forget his name, but
Ty Burrell.
Yeah, Ty Burrell. And she actually, Olivia Wilde is very, very funny in this. So there you go. My lukewarm recommendation for Butter.
All right. It sounds decent-ish. The other film coming out is a documentary about the healthcare system called Escape Fire, The Fight to Rescue American Healthcare. Never heard of it. No idea. So yeah, I would say, I don't know, I was looking forward to Taken 2 until I just heard that it sucked. I'd probably rather cut off my own arm than see another Tim Burton film, but I kind of like stop motion. And I did like his short for Frankenweenie back when it came out.
Just go see Looper again.
I'm just going to see Looper again.
Are we doing Frankenweenie next week, though?
No, we're doing Pitch Perfect.
No, there'll be something better.
Okay.
Yeah, Pitch Perfect. I did say that Pitch Perfect was like daring me to see it because it seemed so designed for me to hate it. I might do that.
It would be kind of funny.
Maybe I'll do it drunk. All right. Yeah. Does anyone have any really strong feelings about something they should go see? Nick, Danny?
No.
All right.
Go see every movie that's coming out.
Every movie. Smashing. All right. Let's run through our random recommendations real quick, and then we can set you people free. So, Nick, why don't you tell us a movie that you saw that you feel that people should check out?
I watched a few movies as of late. I only liked a few of them. That was kind of weird. It's a weird feeling when you watch several movies and only about two or three of them work. So I'm going to go with Eyes Without a Face, a 1960 French horror film directed by Georges Franju. It's in the Criterion Collection. I watched this on Hulu Plus, actually. Very creepy. Very, very unsettling film. Has at least one scene of violence that is so horrific, I can't believe it came from a movie that was released in 1960. Considering the title, you can probably figure out what's going on. It's also just beautifully made, too. The word that I kept reading about it beforehand was poetic, and I think that's very true when you see the film itself. High class, lowbrow. Let's put it that way. Definitely see it if you can.
All right, excellent. And Danny, what about yourself?
Well, unlike Nick, I liked most of the movies I watched this week. So sucks to be you. And
can I just ask this question? Is Life of Pi the most beautiful movie you've ever seen
in my whole life?
Yeah, someone said that saw it.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. No. Wanted to confirm.
I was just making sure you were talking about my entire life, and then the answer is 100% yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the reaction to that movie has been kind of crazy. But my recommendation is Shotgun Stories by Jeff Nichols. I was a huge fan of Take Shelter, but I had never seen this movie, and I watched it on Instant this week, and it really blew me away. It has another expectedly great Michael Shannon performance, but it's more of an ensemble film than Take Shelter. And Nichols just has a really uncanny knack for kind of small town truths and what the people there are like. And every line of dialogue feels like it just comes right from that place. And I'm really looking forward to his new movie, Mud, even though some of the early word says it's a little more conventional. But I think he's really good.
I like how you say it shows what they're like and they're all, you know, stupid and grits, but
yeah, but it's human.
I know, but
Shotgun Stories is awesome.
Yeah,
better than Take Shelter.
I think. Ooh, so too. Even though, man, I love Take Shelter.
Huh?
Yeah,
check that out then.
There's a line in the movie, one of my favorite lines, where they're just talking about the town, and they're talking about what they would do if they owned the town, and Michael Shannon says, "We don't own the square root of shit." And it's such a good line, and there's like a dozen more, so yeah, just go watch that.
Nice. Jordan, what about yourself?
Yes, I've spent the last 2 weeks or so going through the Indiana Jones Blu-ray Complete Adventures, and yeah, so these films, I think you guys have heard of them. Yes.
Vaguely, you know, yeah. Off and on. It's one of those things.
It was actually cool. My wife had never seen any of them, so it was kind of cool getting, yeah, at all. So.
And you married her?
Well, yeah, I married her.
You're a forgiving man.
Well, I could show her these for the first time, yeah. And no, it was kind of cool seeing her reaction to them. Yeah, so for me, Temple of Doom was the first actual Indiana Jones I ever saw when I was little. And so that movie, I've kind of have seen the more negative side to it now rewatching it. It only features about two good set pieces, and it just has such a wildly different tone than the first and third, but I would say that Last Crusade kind of stuck out as being my favorite of the four, even though the first one is indeed great. But I think the Last Crusade just kind of ups the ante a little bit, and I kind of liked what they did a little bit more with Sean Connery's character and stuff like that. And then for as far, I know you guys are all interested in my opinion on Crystal Skull, right? So it's kind of funny. That movie I saw twice in one day when it came out in theaters, because I think I went with two different groups of people. And I actually, you know, I had some slight fun with it, and I've been scared to revisit it because of just the pure hatred from everyone. And definitely looking at it again, it is a very, very, very poor movie. Just about.
Hey, it's fun.
It's
better than Temple of Doom.
I
don't know about that.
No?
No, because I think Temple of Doom, even though it only has a few great set pieces, they do have two of my favorites in the series with the trolley car thing and then what's the other one? Oh, the bridge at the end. Yeah, even the way it's shot is so, like, even, I don't know, it just feels such a plain film. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like,
yeah,
just that not that much thought in the production design whatsoever, and it's just kind of just so sad. Harrison Ford's character, like one set piece just involves him literally riding on the back of a motorcycle with Shia LaBeouf in front. And I really have no problem with Shia LaBeouf. I think he's fine in the movie. It's just literally like the plot is just so uninteresting. Seeing this again, the other ones I was super invested in, aside from maybe Temple of Doom, moving on though to the special feature stuff. I watched an hour documentary on Raiders of the Lost Ark, and a surprising amount of behind the scenes stuff with Steven Spielberg, just kind of like B-roll with him, just kind of shooting the shit, and it's just kind of funny. He's very, very, very cocky. And it's just funny to see him kind of do what relatively small. Like, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark, he said it only took like a little over 70 days to film, which is kind of wild for a blockbuster like that. And yeah, and I will say, what was the other part? Oh, and it shows kind of what they intended, that one famous scene where Indiana Jones just shoots the guy that pulls out the the knife. And yeah, it kind of was cool the way they shot it. Like, it was originally going to be this huge sequence where they get up to like this butcher shop, and like the guy with the knife is actually doing the butcher's work because he's like chopping up the meat as he misses Indiana Jones behind him. So it's kind of cool to see kind of that behind the scenes stuff that never made it. So yeah, obviously, just in terms of all four movies, they all look beautiful. Surprised how good the first movie looks, like Lawrence of Arabia-esque shots that I was kind of surprised, especially like, yeah. Anyway, so I will just say it's definitely a big step up. So go get these movies and then don't watch two of them. Yeah, it's kind of sad to say that. But yeah, it's kind of sad. So, but yeah, if it's cheap enough, definitely worth it for just the two. Hopefully they just don't ever make another Indiana Jones, because I think we know how that goes. So.
Yeah, it would be nice. Well, actually, you know, going off of the current pattern, the next one should be great.
That's true. The five, yeah.
Vin Diesel.
What is it? Dwayne Johnson saves the franchises, you know?
Oh, God.
Yeah. All right. Anyways.
I saw Ryan, the Raid Redemption.
Ooh.
Yeah. this is the second time I've seen it. I saw it once in theaters, and then I saw it again last night. And it's still good. It's still good, guys. It's a really hard pounding, crazy ass action film. It's just crazy. I don't know. Like, it's hard to explain. I just, like, this movie is like a one man human wrecking ball of fists and feet, just making his way through an endless amount of bad guys.
I still haven't seen that.
God damn it, Newman! Get out there and see it. It's really good.
I want to. I haven't.
It's only like an hour and a half long, too.
Yeah, I just haven't seen it.
All right,
it would actually be a good double feature with The Oranges, I think. If you have some time to kill.
The Oranges, followed by The Raid Redemption.
The Oranges Redemption.
And there is a lot of redemption in this movie. And that's so much redemption. I don't know. Apparently they're making a sequel, right?
Yep, a trilogy, yeah.
Trilogy.
All right, so we can all look forward to that. It's not really a thematically deep movie, so there's not a lot I can say. This guy punches people really well.
Yeah.
That'll have to do. And that brings us to the end of our discussion. So we can tell you where we can be found on the internet in the interim between now and next week, when we will be talking about something. I'm not entirely sure what. I'm still saying Pitch Perfect, though. So, Nick, why don't you tell us where we can find you on the internet?
TheFilmStage.com, Twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
And Danny?
TheFilmStage.com, TheKingBulletin.com, and Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
Jordan?
TheFilmStage.com and Twitter.com/TheFilmStage.
And you can find me on The Film Stage, as well as my own personal website, DearFilm.net. And you can follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com/BrianJRowan. Thank you for listening. Come back next week.